Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh and welcome to Ummah Radio. You are listening to the Mustalah al-Hadith class with myself, Abu Mus'ab. Now this is a new class which is starting from tonight. Now Mustalah al-Hadith is the terminologies of the muhaddithin, the terminologies that the ulama of hadith use with regards to a hadith. Whether when they say a hadith is sahih, when they say it is da'if, when they say it is munkar, when they say it is mudraj, when they say it is mawdu', what do all these terms mean and why is it such that the hadith is mawdu' and not da'if, or why is it da'if, is it possible it can be strengthened, all these sort of things. All of this falls under this category of mustalah al-hadith, or usul al-hadith, whichever of the terms that you prefer to use. The ulama have used them all. So what we are starting tonight is the kitab which is known as simply just the Muqaddimah fi Usul al-Hadith of Imam Mawlana Abdul Haq al-Dihlawi rahimahullah. Now this kitab here, it's normally printed as part of the kitab Mishkat al-Masabih. The Darul Ulooms in general, they all tend to use this particular kitab. So the first introduction a student of knowledge comes out with and actually delves into the field of hadith is when he comes into, depending on the amount of years in the course that he is doing, whether it's the regular in the fifth year when he starts Mishkat, then he would come across this first chapter of Usul al-Hadith. Prior to that, he would have done a hadith such as in Riyad al-Salihin, but that would just be plain simple recitation of a hadith, not getting involved into the details behind the hadith, that why is it authentic, or is it authentic, is it not authentic, and all those sort of things. So this kitab here, it was written by Imam Abdul Haq al-Dihlawi rahimahullah, who passed away in the year 1052. And this kitab is a very nice kitab. It's simple, it's straightforward, and it's easy. And it was for that reason in particular that Mawlana Abdul Haq al-Dihlawi rahimahullah had written this kitab in the first place. Because what he saw taking place at the time, which is mentioned, is that the Darul Ulooms, there are a couple of famous books when it comes to Mustalah al-Hadith. One of the most famous being the kitab Nukhbatul Fikr of Imam Ibn Hajar al-Asqalani rahimahullah. Another very famous one is the Muqaddimah of Imam Ibn Salah rahimahullah. These are, so to say, the two most famous books of Hadith, or Mustalah al-Hadith rather, I should say. Now, the students generally, the madaris, they chose to do the book Nukhbatul Fikr. And Nukhbatul Fikr, while it is a very nice kitab, but the wordings and things that are used in the book can sometimes be difficult and confusing. And that is why, for that very reason actually, Imam Ibn Hajar rahimahullah, he had written a sharah, an explanation of his very own kitab. Because he mentions that some of his students wrote to him and told him, is it possible you could write an explanation of the Nukhbatul Fikr? And therefore he wrote Sharah Nukhbatul Fikr. He wrote an explanation on his kitab to make it easier for the students to understand. So although it's a very nice kitab, but it can be a bit difficult and complicated. And what was happening at the time of Mawlana Abdul Haq al-Dihlawi rahimahullah, what he says, is that the students in the madaris, the only thing they were actually doing was this kitab, Sharah Nukhbatul Fikr. And although it's a nice kitab and everything, and it's explained in a proper manner, but it's on more on a higher level. So when you are a new student, rather I say you new in this particular field of Mustalah al-Hadith, you know nothing of the subject, and now you are thrown into the deep end with a book like Sharah Nukhbatul Fikr, then you don't comprehend and understand everything. And this is what Mawlana Abdul Haq al-Dihlawi rahimahullah had seen, that the students were going through, they were reading the book, but they were unable to comprehend and retain everything that they were learning, because the book was difficult in its terminologies and things like this. So the many students were unable to understand it, and that was in fact the only book of Mustalah al-Hadith that they were doing in the Darsi Nizami course at the time. So therefore, Mawlana Abdul Haq al-Dihlawi rahimahullah, he had this idea to write another book on Mustalah al-Hadith to make it easy and simplified for the students, so that any basic beginner can read the book and it is easily understandable to him, that there's nothing over the top difficult that you can't understand and things like this. So this is the reason why Mulana Abdul Haq Dihlawi rahimahullah had decided to write this book in the first place. Okay, so that's just a little bit with regards to the book. The book, if you are following this lesson from the link which is posted on Ummah Forum, you will find, which is www.ummah.com/forum, you will see a subsection of the forum called Ummah Radio. In there will be a sticky thread called Tuesday Mustalah al-Hadith class. In there you will find a download link to this particular kitab. So if you download it over there, it's a very nice print and everything. And in that particular print, the book starts quite late on from the actual PDF itself. The book actually only starts on page 36, or rather page 35. The whole few pages prior to that is all just introductions. It's an introduction by Mulana Salman Nadwi. So it's Mulana Salman Nadwi speaking on Mulana Abdul Haq Dihlawi's life and his sacrifices and his knowledge and all that, and then he's speaking on the topic of Mustalah al-Hadith itself and where it comes from, how it changed over the years and things like that. So just to run a little bit over some of the things which is mentioned, he say we take a glance at the science of Mustalah al-Hadith. Okay, someone asked a question that do you have the kitab link in a different print? The only link, the only print and link I've got is the one which is available on Ummah Forum, which is a Lebanon print, and it's a very good quality print, unlike the regular Maktaba Millat Dioban print, which is linked with Mishkat, which can be difficult for many people to read. So the only link, unfortunately, that I have been able to find online is this good Lebanese print. So if you don't have that one, the only other print I know of, like I say, is the one that is part of Mishkat itself, and for that you would have to buy the whole Mishkat to get that particular print. And that Muqaddima also, I find that it's only in the Maktaba Millat Dioban print and not in other Lebanese prints of Mishkat. So in the Lebanese print of the book Mishkat itself, you won't find this Muqaddima of Mulana Abdul Haq Dihlawi. You'll only find it in the India print. So just be aware of that point. But any case, this book can be bought online on nilwafurat.com. Otherwise, you can even download the PDF and read it on your own computer. But any case, that's with regards to the link of the book. Now, we were doing here, if you turn to page 11, is where he moves now on. He says, لَمْحَةٌ فِي تَارِيخِ أُصُولِ الْحَدِيثِ, a glimpse through the history of the أُصُولُ الْحَدِيثِ. He says, الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيد المرسلين محمد وآله وصحبه ومن تبعهم بإحسان ودعا بدعوتهم إلى يوم الدين. Then he moves on. I'm not going to read all of this and translate it verbatim and things like this. I'm just going to explain in English what is being said here. He speaks about that the history of Usul al-Hadith or Mustalah al-Hadith, as how it is called, it is a very important knowledge amongst the science of Islam. And he says that there were different stages as to how Usul al-Hadith, Mustalah al-Hadith, evolved over the years. He say that only from the 4th century did it become codified really. Because at the beginning of Islam, it was Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam who would speak to the Sahaba, and the Sahaba radiyallahu anhum would have memorized it, and they would then narrate it to other Sahaba and so on. And here on this point in particular, some of the Sahaba radiyallahu anhum had even written down a hadith. So contrary to the claims of the hadith rejectors who say that a hadith was never written down until so many hundreds of years later, all of that is lies, because of the Sahaba radiyallahu anhum, they had even written down the hadith during the lifetime of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Then they come out with another hadith wherein Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, "Don't write down from me," and they try to use this as a proof against writing and compiling and following the hadith. Within their ignorance, they come to this conclusion. The ulama have explained that in detail time and again that the reason why is because the Quran used to be written down, and if the while the Sahaba were writing down the hadith as well, it would be possible that somehow a hadith would have been included in amongst the pages of the Quran, and a person would think it to be part of the Quran. And Allah has protected the Quran from any change and things from people. So therefore, Allah had made that Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam prevent the Sahaba from writing it down in this particular manner, so that it has not become mixed up with the Quran. But as we can see, the Sahaba radiallahu anhum, they had still contained and memorized tens of thousands of ahadith, and they were able to relate it throughout the ages till it has reached us as it is today. So he says like this: in the first age, the first generation, it was just from the Sahaba now to other Sahaba, and now to their immediate students from amongst the Tabi'een. And it went like this to the Tabi'u Tabi'een and them. And there were certain rules and things which were put into place. The ulama would, there was jarh and ta'dil, jarh wa ta'dil was the criticism of the narrators. These things were all in place, but it was codified later on. That is now what he says. And we know that Imam Yahya ibn Ma'in, Yahya ibn Qattan, rahimahum Allah, the two of them played a very big role in the Mustalah, in the Jarh wa Ta'dil, and many of the other ulama as well. So the hadith as it came down, like fiqh itself, in the time of the Sahaba, there was no, as you can say, books of fiqh that you can pick up, Al-Hidayah, you pick up Al-Mughni, you pick up Al-Majmu'. There was no books of fiqh like that. It only became codified. Imam Abu Hanifa rahimahullah, he was the first one to actually codify fiqh the way it has come to us today. So in a like manner, the ulama had codified the science of hadith later on and brought about all these terms to make it easier for the people, that when we say a hadith is sahih, what does it mean? When you say a hadith is hasan, what does it mean? We can make a amal, we can act upon a hadith which is sahih, and we can act upon a hadith which is hasan. But why is one called hasan and why is one called sahih? What is the difference between them? Is there a difference between them? All these sort of things. These mustalah al-hadith are technical terms for ulama. It's not for the layman in the street. Unfortunately, today what you find is that everyone in his friend, he throws around the terms that this hadith is sahih, this hadith is da'if, rejected and things like this, with no understanding of what a hadith really is and what are these terms that the muhaddithin had used. That when they said a hadith is da'if, what does it really mean when we say that the hadith is da'if? When a hadith is da'if, it may be da'ifun li nafsihi, hasanun li ghayrihi. And that's something which you will come to learn later on, especially when it comes to Imam At-Tirmidhi rahimahullah. Because unlike the other muhaddithin who would narrate, who would grade a hadith and say, هذا حديث صحيح, this hadith is sahih, Imam At-Tirmidhi rahimahullah, he had his own style. He would say, for example, هذا حديث حسن صحيح, or for example even, هذا حديث حسن صحيح غريب. Three terms. He says it's hasan, he says it's sahih, and he says it's gharib, all at once, at the same time. So there's all these sort of things that have to be taken into consideration. So I would venture to say that the most complicated of sciences that takes time really is the science of this usulul hadith. The other sciences of Islam are rather straightforward. But when it comes to usulul hadith, then you have the jarh wa ta'dil. Now you have a narrator, let's say Jabir al-Ju'fi. Now Imam Abu Hanifa rahimahullah, he says, I have not seen anyone who was a bigger liar than Jabir al-Ju'fi. Then you find another Imam Waqi', he says that Jabir al-Ju'fi was a very great, was a very good, pious person. Great person. And if it wasn't for him, the people would not have gotten hadith. So here you have two great a'imma having a difference of opinion as to one particular narrator. So why is there this difference? Whose word will we take? Who is in the correct? Are they both correct? Is one wrong? Is there some mix-up somewhere? All these sort of things have to be taken into consideration when you are grading a hadith. That is why I said that I would venture to say that the most complicated of sciences is that of Mustalah al-Hadith. So in any case, he was speaking here about how the science of hadith had changed and evolved over the years, from how it was during the time of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, where the Sahaba radiallahu anhum would just have heard it, and they would then just in turn again narrate the hadith to the Tabi'een, who in turn would narrate it to their students, and so on and so forth. There was no, as you can say, that the Sahaba would narrate a hadith and say, هذا حديث صحيح. Obviously, any hadith narrated by a Sahabi is automatically authentic. That we say, that is why we have one term in Mustalah al-Hadith, or rather I should say in Jarh al-Ta'dil. All our books of Jarh al-Ta'dil stops at the student of a Sahabi, at the Tabi'in. We don't take it any further than that. Because we have a statement, we say, As-Sahabatu kulluhum adul. All of the Sahaba, they are all trustworthy, they are all just, they are all reliable, so we don't question them whatsoever. If they narrate a hadith and say Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam said so, then we take it as such and we don't question it at all. If a tabi'i says so, we will still check his words out, but not the words of the sahaba radiyallahu anhum. So in any case, that is how the hadith had transformed from the sahaba who would just simply narrate it to a tabi'i whose words would have to be verified, authenticated, and things like this, right up like this, and that is how we have a sanad to see that, did you hear it from him, who indeed definitely heard it from him, and so on and so forth, right up until the Sahaba radiallahu anhum, who again in turn had heard it from Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam. And also the reason why this science had come out like this is because as the time went on, with the emergence of all the different sects, whether it was the Shia, the Khawarij, the Mu'tazila, all these people, especially the Shia, they were always known as liars and fabricators. So these deviant and kuffar groups that split away from Islam, they would fabricate narrations. And without the signs of Jarh al-Ta'dil and all this Mustalah al-Hadith, it would be difficult to tell what is authentic and what is not authentic. Because for the simple reason, so the Shia come and he says, this person narrated from this person, who narrated from that person, who said that Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam said X, Y, Z, for example now. Now, how do you know that this is authentic, how do you know this is a lie and not authentic? That is why this Jarh al-Ta'dil is there. That it's not just for someone to make a claim and say, so-and-so heard from so-and-so. But rather, there's proof that this person and this person lived in the same time, and they lived nearby and they met and all these things. The muhaddithin have spared no effort in delving to the utmost depth when it comes to the narrators, and they have taken them and checked them out totally. And when there is someone who they don't know, then therefore he would be considered majhul, an unknown narrator, and for that very reason, that him being unknown, it would already put a weakness to the narration because there's an unknown narrator in the chain. So the signs of hadith that Allah has protected the Quran, as we can see, is quite clear, but Allah has also protected the hadith through the various means, and one of this means is this, as you can say, the main means is this Mustalah al-Hadith. And the efforts of the muhaddithin, the sanad, the asanid, all these things that have come as a result of this, through this means Allah has preserved the hadith as well. That is why till today, a person can narrate that I narrate from my teacher, who narrate from his teacher, 26, 30, however many people in your chain, right up to Imam Bukhari, who takes it right up to Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam, a complete unbroken chain like that for a hadith, directly to Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam. So that is how the ahadith has come to us also in this authenticated form, and that is why the ulama have said that any person who rejects the ahadith, like how the hadith rejectors do, then with consensus amongst the ulama, and I say this amongst the ulama and even amongst the deviants also, they are unanimous. Deviants, like whether it's the Barelvis and them, even they consider a hadith rejected to be a kafir. So whether it's a Salafi, or a Barelvi, or a Diobandi, or whatever group the person belongs to, all those ulama have given the fatwa that a hadith rejected is a kafir. For this reason, is that the Quran itself came to us through these very same chains. So if you reject the chain on one side, then obviously, how can you accept a chain on one side and reject it on the other side when there's no difference between the chain? So therefore, if you reject the hadith because you say, it could have been changed, it's unreliable, X, Y, Z, whatever you want to come along with, then the very same would apply to the Quran as well, because what's good for the goose is good for the gander. So if you say that the hadith are unreliable, then wa na'udhu billahi min dhalik, you are saying that the Quran is unreliable, because it came to us through these very same channels. That is why the ulama are unanimous that a hadith rejecter is a kafir, and No, there's no kufr duna kufriya. Such a person is far removed outside the fold of Islam. Okay, so anyway, like I say, in this whole few pages, he speaks a lot, and there's lots of nice points in this whole chapter that he's mentioning over here. The first book which was written with regards to Mustalah al-Hadith, the books of people like Imam Khatib al-Baghdadi and Qadi Iyad, and all the other ulama who had written books on hadith and everything of the sort here. There's a lot, like I say, there's a lot that is of knowledge in here, but we're not going to be doing this book verbatim, word for word, so therefore we'll be skipping this whole entire chapter here in the beginning, and we'll move past all the efforts of the ulama of India that they did for hadith and things like this, and move on to the actual book itself, which we, if you turn to page 33, that is, so to say, the front cover. مُقَدِّمَةٌ فِي أُصُولِ الْحَدِيثِ لِلْمُحَدِّثِ الْجَلِيلِ الشَّيْخِ عَبْدِ الْحَقِّ الدِّهَلَوِي رَحِمَهُ اللَّهِ. The book's name is the مُقَدِّمَة, the introduction to the science of hadith by the Muhaddith Shaykh Abdul Haq al-Dihlawi رَحِمَهُ اللَّهِ. So that was on page 33, and from page 34 being blank, page 35 is where the actual lesson starts, which would be the first chapter, which deals with the explanation and recognizing the hadith and its various types. But we will start the actual book itself, all these definitions and things, next time inshallah. This tonight was only just an introduction to the book itself. So, not to jump the gun and start the lesson early, we will leave this until next week, Tuesday, at 7:30 PM GMT, inshallah. At that time, we will begin from here, page 35, Al-Faslu al-Awwal fi ta'arif al-hadithi wa anwa'ihi, the first chapter with regards to the ta'arif, the recognizing and understanding the hadith and its types. Alright then, so that will be from next week inshallah. So until then, we will end for now, and we say wa sallallahu wa sallama wa baraka ala nabiyyina Muhammad, subhanallahi wa bihamdihi, subhanaka allahumma wa bihamdik, nashhadu an la ilaha illa anta, nastaghfiruka wa natubu ilayk. Wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.